From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. Along with your calls, of course, some topics to talk over. Tell us about them, Zorba.
Why do we swear? Does it have some usefulness to it? We'll talk about some interesting research. You bet. I've been known to swear on occasion. On occasion, my mother would turn over in her grave. I never heard her swear, but I've taken over from my father. Anyway, artificial sweeteners and whether or not they're actually linked to diabetes. We'll talk about whether or not that study is true or false, truth or consequences.
You've been putting down the dangers of artificial sweeteners forever. So we'll find out what this one's all about.
Absolutely.
And our recipe.
Portobello chili tacos. It's a great way to use mushrooms and to enjoy them.
Mm-hmm. The number again, 800-462-7413. Our first caller, Zorba, is a listener in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Zorba. I am curious about something. I recently saw a demonstration on laughing yoga, or LOGA, and the claims are that if you laugh, even fake laugh, you can derive significant health benefits just from laughing. So I'm wondering if you're familiar with this and if this is a placebo effect or if there is some science behind that and what it is and how it works.
So is laughter the best medicine?
Yeah, right. That's exactly it. Tom has been waiting for years, like Groucho Marx, say the secret word and win $100. Yeah. He's been waiting to say that. Well, there's some very interesting research. There are a whole bunch of research, robust research on laughter and what it activates and the muscles that we use when we laugh and the muscles that we use when we smile, and then the muscles on the obverse side that we use when we frown, you know, frowning. You know, why do we laugh more? Why do we have babies? And we look at babies and we reinforce laughter and we interact more with babies when they laugh. And when we frown, we feel bad and we hug them. But why do we like smiling people more than frowning people? So clearly there must be some evolutionary purpose to that, because nothing makes sense in biology except by the light of evolution. So there must be some purpose behind it. And it may be that innately it increases the endorphins, you know, within our brain, because we feel better when we laugh, right? And it's very, very interesting, because there was a study done a number of years ago where they look at people that are up, you can't hear them, but they're jumping up and down and they're making responses to something, and people then grade the responses. And there's some people that jump up and down because they're upset and they're angry. They're red in the face and they're jumping up and down. And other people jump up and down because the Packers have scored a touchdown in Wisconsin. And they look the same. If you look at them, they may look the same, but they're completely different things that are going on in their brain. In one case, it's flight or fright, and you don't feel good when you yell at somebody. And the other case, you're yelling and you're feeling better, and your endorphins make you feel good. So, yes, I think this is an interesting concept. I've heard of it. I don't know much about it, and in fact, it may be sort of a new way to approach things. You know, don't be serious about exercise. Don't be serious about yoga. Be happy about exercise. Yeah. Be happy about yoga. You know. So, are you doing it?
Well, I'm interested in it. And the thing that really surprised me was I could understand if you're laughing and it's funny, but fake laughing can help you too. So that's my curiosity behind how can fake laughing kind of fake your body out.
Well, I don't think, you know, we can't fake our body out. We've all faked laughed, right? You know,
yeah.
You listen to a joke, yeah. You respect someone, and you laugh, and the joke isn't funny, but you want to communicate that you're connecting to them. Maybe it's the same thing. That I'm not sure of.
Well, it seems a lot of it is breathing, so you're going through these little exercises with this ha-ha-ha-ha-hee-hee-hee-hee, mm-hmm. Or you're doing silly things, you know, within the group, you know, throwing the ball or saying silly little rhymes and things like that. And, you know, you do kind of get into it, and it is kind of fun. You do start laughing because you're laughing at each other and what you're saying.
Right. So then real laughter is connecting to the fake laughter. I don't think laughter really does anything. I mean,
so maybe that's it, that you start with that, but then it kind of catches on, and then you really are.
Well, it's so silly.
Seems like
you just got to laugh at it.
You know, studies of where they took, like, you know, ill children or people or whatever, and they're watching, like, you know, Three Stooges or something,
yes,
and that there's something that does literally happen in the body.
It does, absolutely. I'm thinking of the Three Stooges now, and it makes me laugh. It's so stupid. You are correct. You see, we just laughed. We just improved our longevity, right, Tom?
Yeah, yep. I'm thinking, how easy is this? That's a good thing.
Yep. Hey, I'm into easy. I'm into good. It's not no pain, no gain. It could be laugh and live longer. That's going to be the title of my new book, Laugh and Live Longer.
Terrific.
Thank you so much. Thanks
Thank
for your
you,
call.
Dr. Zorba.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. But before our next call, Zorba, why do we swear?
Well, why do we swear? Do you swear?
Well,
when do you swear, Tom?
when I'm not on the radio.
That's very good.
I've always thought through the years there are only two rules for a person on the radio.
Yeah.
One is never say that word, and the other is get off on time.
Get off on time.
If you do those things, you're a successful broadcaster. Anyway, why do we swear?
Yeah, but it's true. I mean, you know, there's some reflex swearing, and that's actually what this particular study looked at. You know, the other day I was cleaning out my garage. I have to clean up my garage periodically because I am a pack rat, and I come from a family of pack rats. We're all pack rats. And in the wintertime, when it's winter, or in the summertime, I have to clean it out to be able to get the stuff in the back of the garage. And I'm cleaning it out, and all of a sudden, this brass piece of this pipe drops on my toe, and the first thing I said was a four-letter word.
Well, yeah, so that's why we swear.
Yeah, it was reflex. Why do we do it? Does it actually make us feel better? So this is a study. They took 67 college students, okay, 67 college students. College students are fairly good at swearing, I would say. You know, they didn't take 67 nuns, you know, or 67 older women who were not as likely to instantly swear.
Right.
And then they looked at different areas of their brain to find out whether or not swearing would activate different parts of their brain. And they gave them different scenarios. And they found out that when you swear, it may be that the amygdala, which is sort of an almond-shaped center of your brain, is activated. That's the center of emotions. And so it may be that swearing somehow releases emotions so that you can go on with what you have to do. Because we use swearing for emphasis. We use it when we're angry. We use it when we're upset. We also use it for happiness, right?
What do you mean?
Well, sometimes I will use a four-letter word when I'm happy. Like, I'll use it for emphasis during a happy time. I may be talking with my kids to kind of shock them and get a smile out of them.
You swear all the time, don't you?
I do not swear all the time. I am a doctor.
When you're in pain, when you're happy, when you're sad.
Yeah, that's right. I guess you're right. I swear all the time. But I swear at emotional times. These are emotional times.
Yeah.
In the middle of my work day, when I'm working, I don't swear.
Of course.
I mean, first of all, I don't swear. You know, it goes through a conscious aspect. You know, we have control over those words.
Yeah.
I mean, we all have control over words. You know, so that we get to a point and then we make a conscious decision whether
to say it
or not. It is a
release, isn't it?
Yes, it is a release. There's something about it.
Something happens. You say a bunch of stuff, and then you don't feel as bad as you did.
No, that's exactly it. And a good friend of mine who many, many years ago when she was a young adult was swearing too much, and she became married to another good friend, and she started saying sugar. That's what she started saying.
Yeah.
And to this day, when I'm with her, when she's upset with something, she'll say sugar.
Yeah.
But she says it with the same emphasis that we may use another four-letter word. Sugar is not a four-letter word. It's a five-letter word. And we know five-letter words are okay, right?
Well, let me think now. I'm trying to think if I can think of a five-letter word that's wrong.
There we go. But we're on the radio, Tom, so you don't have to finish that thought.
Okay. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And our next caller, Zorba, is a listener in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call, Dr. Zorba.
Sure. How can we help?
Well, this call is both about yogurt and about sweeteners, artificial sweeteners. And I like flavored yogurts. And I thought they were relatively good for me. And I went to the grocery store, bought my favorite brand, came home, looked at it, and it contains aspartame. So I was very disappointed, although I didn't swear. I went back to the grocery store.
Good, good.
And I looked at several other brands of the lower-fat diet yogurts. Mm-hmm. And they all of them, without exception, either contained sucralose or mm-hmm. aspartame.
Right, right.
So I basically said, okay, well, I guess I don't get to eat yogurt. Now, of course, I know that I could buy unflavored organic yogurt, and on my way to work, stop at a cherry orchard, climb a tree, pick a bundle of cherries, wash them, pit them, pulp them, put them in my yogurt, and then have my 5-minute snack.
So it'll be
edible.
Somehow
that doesn't really seem feasible. So I have been giving up on yogurts, and my husband and I both have started reading ingredients very carefully.
Good.
And I am finding that this artificial sweetener, either sucralose or aspartame,
it's
insidious.
No.
It's in everything.
Right.
It was in my husband's Arizona diet tea, which he drinks instead of water.
Right.
So he is now boiling gallons of tea, our own tea, and adding stevia. And, I mean, you know, short of going to the cherry orchard, this has been very time-consuming.
Oh, no, it is.
These sweeteners.
Yeah, I've got a couple of suggestions here. But first of all, congratulations. You've read those labels.
Yeah. And only when I bring my glasses.
Yes, only when you bring your glasses to me. Although my smartphone will also work as glasses when I don't have it. But you have discovered if it says diet, it has a sweetener in it, period. I mean, until proven otherwise. But basically, if it says diet this or diet that, that means it's got either a sucralose in it or it's got aspartame. It has, you know, it either has one or the other. Although stevia is sort of coming into use more and more. Stevia is sort of the new kid on the block. Used to have saccharin. Saccharin, of course, has a bitter sort of aftertaste. And that's what you've discovered. Now, if you want to go to a yogurt that is not sweetened, what do you do?
I buy plain yogurt and add stevia. But I like the convenience of being able to buy a flavored yogurt and go to work.
100%. Now, you've got another option that is sort of interesting that I was thinking about as you were doing this. First of all, a teaspoon of sugar is 15 calories. It's not a lot. I mean, we think of it as a lot of calories. And so if you buy a jelly or a jam that you like, okay, organic or not organic, but you buy a jelly or a jam that you like, it is not going to have more than 15 calories. That's what it's going to have. So you can take a jelly or a jam that you like, and you can take 1 or 2 teaspoons, and you will add 15 or 30 calories, which, believe me, is minuscule in your life. And you mix that up with a yogurt that does not have an artificial sweetener, and you now have something that is sweet and tasty. And yes, you have to actually take it from one jar into another, but that's minimal stuff. And then you have something that's good. And that's what I would do from a yogurt. Now, from the point of view of diet tea, you are 100% correct. And for that, what you have to do is brew your own tea, put it in, and it does take a while. But what you do is you brew a gallon, you put the stevia in there, and then you have to pour it into various bottles. And the fact is, preparing your own food means it's better. Almost by definition, because all of a sudden you're paying attention to the ingredients and you're no longer buying industrialized food. You look at the side of some of those yogurt containers and they contain a whole bunch of ingredients that you didn't expect to be in there.
There's
right?
more ingredients than the size of the yogurt.
Totally. Oh, no, you're right. Carragum and this and that because it's this and that. When I do it, and all you want to do is get pristine yogurt, and in the end you get industrialized yogurt. But try that. Pick out a jelly or a jam or something else and mix it up. And yes, that's the only way to do it. And you're right about the artificial sweeteners. And this is why people have to read labels, because if you don't read labels, you don't know what's going into your body. And that's the way life goes.
Yep. Thank you so much. That's
You're
a good
welcome.
Idea. That's
and
much easier than anything
It's
else.
Much easier than going and picking the cherries and doing that and putting it in.
Like, oh, my gosh. I mean, we already grow our own chickens and things like that. But, you know, just...
Now, well, when you go and buy the jam or the jelly, read the side of it. You know, you don't want to buy diet jam or diet jelly. You want to buy something that has the fruit in it. And by the way, besides jam and jelly, they also have preserves, which is, you know, which are different. There's certain FDA. And then there's fruit. I can't remember what the name of it, but there are a variety of organic products that basically have pulverized fruit in it. Put that in, and then you've got something. And more importantly, you have control. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that idea. Great. Thanks.
And thank you so much for the call. And before the break, Zorba, time now for your favorite segment, mostly because it now has its own theme song, The Grammar Police.
Oh, no, it's The Grammar Police. I love that song. And if you want to listen to that song, come to our website, zorbapastor.org, or come through Facebook, push the like button, and you'll be there. Come on. Everyone who has Grammar Police following them, like I do, needs a song.
Okay. Now, even the mighty Grammar Police need executive oversight.
Oh.
So today, we'll read an email that was handed down to us straight from the top of the Grammar Administration, the Grammar Police Police. Edward of Salt Lake City writes, "Dear Zorba, regarding the nice grammar policewoman who corrected you on your use of regimen instead of regime, a very decent case can be made for using either word in the context for which you were taken to task. In the dictionary, we find a second definition of regime as a system or planned way of doing things, especially one imposed from above. Example, detention centers can have a very tough physical regime. So, this alternate definition can apply to your past use of this so hotly debated term."
So every time I use the word regime, I have to think of a retention center or a detention center?
No. You don't have to think of anything. You can be incorrect in my
belief. So I can be correct or incorrect.
Yeah.
I believe, and
other grammar police
that's
believe
right.
you're being incorrect.
That's right.
But
yes, that's right. But in fact, other people believe I'm correct. It's sort of like tomatoes, tomatoes, potatoes, potatoes.
Yeah, kind of.
Sort of. Maybe not exactly. Okay.
So anyway, this alternate definition can apply to your past use of this so hotly debated term.
I'm off the hook. I don't have to go to a detention center.
If you'd like to bolster the Grammar Police's exacting regime, send your grievances along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. And don't forget, you've got to hum that tune.
Well, our recipe is coming up, Zorba. More calls, of course. Let's see, our medical myth buster, another interesting topic to talk about, all right here on Zorba Pastor and Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Back to the phones in just a bit, but before our next call, Zorba, we're going to make some portobello chili tacos.
That's right. And now, do you like tacos?
No.
Oh. Well, this recipe is not for you. I like tacos.
I don't mind the taste of tacos.
Yeah, but don't you?
I asked if you liked tacos. Pick something up and then it crumbles.
You mean because it's
and
too
it falls
messy.
All over.
Are you really careful about what you eat? If you want to make sure that everything is like totally clean? Are you OCD? You're not OCD.
No.
Look at you. You're
you
not OCD.
You have to be OCD to not I mean, want food
I mean,
to fall
I,
all
I'm
over
looking
you.
At you know, I'm looking at everything is not in order in front of you. You've got a paperclip over there. And I mean, but anyway, tacos are one of the main foods in America, right? I mean, you look at pizza, tacos.
Sure, okay.
Why do kids like tacos?
I don't know.
I have no idea. Maybe because they're crunchy and messy. Didn't you like to be messy as a kid, like ice cream?
Can we do the recipe?
I'm sorry. I'm just discussing the texture of food. But a crunch is important with the texture. Anyway, portobello mushrooms. Do you like portobello mushrooms?
No, I don't.
I'm not a mushroom person. How about the word chili? Do you like the word chili?
Chili I love.
But this is not the chili that you know, but it's kind of chili-esque.
All right, let's do
so
it.
Chili that you love.
Let's do it and get it over with.
Okay, we're going to get it over with. This is not the kind of thing. things. So get it over with. No, some people are going to like this. They're
I'm sure. I know that.
In fact, I would bet that this is going to be a very popular recipe. We'll see how many likes we get on Facebook. I bet we're going to get a ton of likes. We're not going to get any frowns. Can you do a thumbs down on Facebook? I'm asking you.
Yeah,
I'm asking you. Can you do a thumbs down on Facebook? Ask your wife. Right? Asking you, can we do a thumbs down? Luddite. A Luddite.
Yeah,
somebody.
You got it.
When was the last time you went into Facebook? Next question. Okay. Portobello chili tacos. 1 tablespoon of extra virgin olive oil.
Big T, extra virgin olive oil.
1 teaspoon of cumin.
Little T, cumin.
Buy your cumin in a Mexican or an Asian grocery store. It will be 1/4 of the cost of the cumin that you usually get in a regular grocery store. Just buy your cumin cheaply. It's just as good. 1/2 teaspoon of oregano.
Half a little tea oregano.
And if you're like I am, you can use a mixed Italian spice. That's what I often use.
Okay.
Now, you need 1 fresh poblano chili. You have to seed it, cut it into 1/4-inch strips.
1 fresh poblano chili, seeded and cut into 1/4-inch strips. Is this hot stuff or not so hot?
No. Chili is, it's like a green chili.
Yeah.
And it's got, so you're seeding, it's got a little bit, sometimes it can be a little bit hot, but it's a green chili.
Hot.
It's used for chili rellenos. Do you ever, you've probably never eaten chili rellenos.
I don't think so.
A chili rellenos, the chili is stuffed with cheese. Oh, it's one of my favorite dishes. Yeah. Anyway, it's a poblano chili. And you can buy that in a Mexican grocery store and a lot of regular grocery stores too. Half an onion. It doesn't matter whatever kind you've got around. Clove of garlic minced. You know, and you could add a little bit more garlic, but this is not a high garlic recipe.
Okay.
Teaspoon of kosher salt.
A little tea kosher salt.
1/2 pound of portobello mushrooms sliced into 1/4-inch strips.
1/2 pound portobello mushrooms sliced into 1/4-inch strips.
Do you know what they look like in the store, the portobello mushrooms?
Yeah, I think so.
You
yeah.
think so?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe you know what they, you kind I of think know. So. It's kind of the bigger mushroom, not the smaller mushroom.
I suppose if you put 5 different kinds in front of me, I'd have trouble figuring
them out. Them out. Okay. Medium Roma tomato sliced, or diced rather.
Medium Roma tomato diced.
2 tablespoons of coarsely chopped fresh cilantro. If you don't like cilantro, don't use it. Use parsley. 1 teaspoon of freshly squeezed lime juice.
Little tea freshly squeezed lime juice.
It's got to be fresh because if it's not fresh, it's not going to taste as good.
Right.
An avocado, medium avocado. You know, I hope people aren't texting this down on their phone while they're driving. You know, that would cause accidents.
Never text while you're
And 8 corn tortillas, you know, the 5.5-inch little corn tortillas.
8 corn tortillas.
Warmed. Let's make it.
Okay.
So heat the olive oil in a large pan, sauté pan, over medium heat until it's shimmering. Add the cumin and oregano. It's got to be on medium heat. It should not be too high. Make it fragrant. That lasts for about a minute. Then add the chilies, onions, garlic, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, and cook it until it's tender. And that'll be somewhere between 5 and 7 minutes. Then add the mushrooms. You're adding them later. Later, add a little bit more salt, cook it, and stir it until the mushrooms are browned and tender. Do not make it too hot. You want the mushrooms to slowly release the moisture. You don't want them to fry. You want them to sauté under a low heat. So be careful, and if you're going to air on the side of less heat. I have a gas stove. That's always easy to do. Remove the pan from the heat, then stir in the tomato, cilantro, and lime juice. Season, if you need to, with a little more salt. Taste it. A little black pepper if you want to. Divide the mixture among the tortillas and served with avocado garnish. It's wonderful. If you got some queso fresco, you could put that on the top. It's wonderful.
Yeah, you make it sound pretty good, actually.
Yeah, that's right. I can finally sell. I'm selling health now. I'm selling portobello chili tacos. If you want our recipe, I bet you can go to our website, zorbapastor.org, or you can find us through Facebook. And what's more, we've got a bonus for you. Guess what the bonus is on our website now?
No idea.
The Grammar Police song.
Oh, of course.
That's right. It has nothing to do with the recipe,
of course.
But it will make you smile.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And Zorba, our next caller is a listener in Billings, Montana. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Well, I don't hear many people call on this problem, but it concerns ED. And I've tried everything. The little blue pills, Cialis, Levitra. I even tried a couple home remedies that you may not have used, but nothing's working. I'm playing pool with a rope.
With a rope. That's very interesting. Interesting phrase. Couple questions. How old are you?
60.
Okay, 60. Do you have diabetes?
No, okay. But I have high blood pressure.
Okay, so diabetes can be an issue. Mm-hmm. Would you know the medicines you're on for high blood pressure?
I can't remember the other name of it. It's a little oval green pill, but I can't.
Yeah, well,
right now.
With generics, there's one oval. But the reason why I ask is beta blockers are a blood pressure pill that can interfere with an erection. Mm-hmm. So what you want to do is you want to find out if the blood pressure pill will make a difference. And if you're not on, if you're on too high a dose of blood pressure pills, that can make a difference. So sometimes changing the blood pressure pill can make a difference with an erection. So first off the bat, I would say check with your doctor, look at your blood pressure pill, consider going to a different pill, which is less likely to cause a problem. Hydrochlorothiazide is a diuretic, commonly used, less likely to cause a problem. An ACE inhibitor, something called lisinopril.
Well, this problem existed before the high blood pressure happened.
Okay, but
this is going
that
years back, and I did my own self-diagnosis, and I think it was somewhat psychological.
Well, you are – that is the next step. So we look at medicines. We look at alcohol, which also is a major factor in erection. But I'm fond of saying that when it comes to erectile function, the most important organ is above the shoulders.
Yeah.
And that clearly is an issue. And Levitra, Cialis, and Viagra only do so much. Sometimes going to a therapist can make a big difference. There are differences in the medications. They have to be taken correctly, especially Viagra must be taken. It works better if it's taken on an empty stomach. Cialis, not so much. Levitra, not so much. Sometimes it'll work one day. It won't work the next. But a lot of this is really due to, as you said, psychological issues that are there too. Have you gone to a urologist?
I have been. I don't have insurance, so I didn't have the cash to go back.
Mm-hmm.
With insurance, and they want their money right now. You bet.
That is always a problem. But looking at the medications, looking at the psychological aspects, looking at the drug aspects, often you can get function back. It won't be the function that you had when you were 18. That function is gone, but it may be that you actually can get some erectile function back, and it may be just working with a doc or working with a therapist in some ways to do that. That's kind of what I would recommend. Thanks for your call.
We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Love your show.
Thank you very much.
We really appreciate that. We don't talk about that. It's something that I think should be talked
about.
Well,
first of all, we don't talk about it in our culture. In Germany, they talk about it all the time. And in France, they talk about it all the time. In other words, in those cultures, sex is considered to be sort of like exercise. It's just part of life. In America, we have our East Coast puritanical snob mentality that this is something that we often don't talk about. And I don't mean it in a negative way, but it's just within our culture we're not going to discuss that. And that may change over time or it may not. If you look back 30 years ago, if somebody had cancer, it was the C word, and they often suffered independently and never discussed it. And the reality is erectile dysfunction and erectile function has only been discussed about since the drugs came out, like Viagra, and so basically is because it's on TV as commercials.
Or depression. Nobody used to talk about depression. You're really a bad person if you
No, if you talk about depression, it's all your fault. And the reality is sex is part of life, and there's nothing wrong with talking about it. And in fact, there's something good to talk about it.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And our next caller, Zorba, is a listener in Oakville, Ontario. Hi.
Hello. Good day to you, and appreciate you taking my call.
Sure, thanks.
My problem stems back a few years, actually, with severe tearing of the eyes. And recently, it used to only occur in the mornings, but now it's almost constantly during the day. And it is also joined with a severe itching, and I keep rubbing my eyes, and I think it's affecting my eyesight somewhat. And I've mentioned it to my family doctor and to an ophthalmologist, and they both kind of said, well, it's dry eye symptoms, and here's some drops that you can try, and I have done that, and it made little or no, actually no difference at all. And another set of drops that I've tried on the recommendation of the ophthalmologist was a anti-allergic, and it seems to have no effect on it either. And I don't think it's an allergy because it occurs no matter what time of the year. And so it's with me constantly, and the itching is getting kind of unbearable.
Oh, it sounds pretty awful. It sounds pretty awful. So first of all, looking back at the tearing, so do the tears go down your cheeks?
Sometimes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But usually I catch it in time and I rub it off. And
okay, because some tearing is due to an eversion of the lower lid. We've got a little gutter in our eyes. If you look at our eyes, there's a little, it's literally a gutter, and it keeps a little moisture in the bottom of the eye. So when we blink, which we do all the time, we're really, really keeping our eyes moist. And sometimes that gutter actually has a problem. There's a problem with the gutter because the gutter, there's a little sort of a tube that goes into the nose. So, you know, for instance, if you're crying, we've all cried at one time, our nose often fills up because it fills up with the tears that are coming out of our eyes that we produce during that emotional response. And sometimes that duct can be plugged, you know, and so it has to actually be opened up. And so first of all, that would be a question that I would have, you know, especially with that. And then the other question is, there are a variety of drops that you can use in a whole bunch of different classes. And you want to go through one drop after another with an ophthalmologist. And if it were me and one eye doctor didn't give me the answer, I frankly would go to another ophthalmologist. I would, you know, people react to drops a little bit differently. And you haven't tried all the drops that we have available, and you want to try different drops to see if something will work because you're really suffering with this. Do you have a vaporizer in your room at night?
No, I do not.
I would get a vaporizer, and I would get an ultrasonic vaporizer. It doesn't make any sound at all, shakes the water, does a great job, and I would make sure my room was really moist when I was sleeping. Because you spend 8 hours a night, or 7 hours a night, or 6 hours a night, or 9 hours a night in bed, and what's going on with your eyes? Your eyes are not always closed. They're often open to going back and forth. You want to keep your eyes moist when you're sleeping. I would use an ointment in the eye, and I'd vaporize the room, put in something in the room to make sure the room really was nice and moist. That's what I would do off the bat. That's an easy step to take to see if it would work. But I'd go to another ophthalmologist. I would get a second opinion.
Well,
I wouldn't accept the first one.
Last episode on this, I was at my family doctor's, and he said, I'm writing a letter to the ophthalmologist, and that was only a couple of weeks ago, and I haven't heard what the result of that is or was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm expecting the ophthalmologist or his girl to call me and say, I've received a letter from your family doctor, and I'd like to see you once again about this. And hopefully that might stir something up.
Yeah, I would do that. And once again, if not, go to a different ophthalmologist. I mean, you know, one person doesn't have all the answers. So he wrote a letter and said, what's going on? And you haven't gotten a response yet. You may want to wait for the letter. I'd call the ophthalmologist office and say, hey, my family doc wrote a letter. What's your response? What do you want to try? Or I'd go somewhere else. You're suffering with this.
A couple of weeks have passed, so chances are that they either have that letter or have some, you know, they haven't called me, but
I would take action and I would call them up. That's because they have the letter there. Very important. Thanks for your call.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And before we take a quick break, Zorba, let's take an email question from a listener named Karen. She writes, Dear Dr. Zorba, my husband has high blood pressure. He seems to have higher blood pressure at our cabin in Montana, and he believes it's caused by the higher altitude there. We live at about 2,000 feet most of the year, but the altitude at our cabin in Montana is over 5,000 feet. Have you heard of this happening with high blood pressure problems, and is there anything we can do to relieve the problem?
Well, high blood pressure can definitely go up at a higher altitude. There's no doubt about it. But it depends on how high the pressure goes. So sometimes there can be a difference. For instance, when people will say are at sea level and then they may go live in the mountains for the winter or part of the winter and they need to have their blood pressure, you know, they need to have their blood pressure changed. If it doesn't go up too high, you're not going to make any difference. You're not going to make any changes in the medicine. So you've got to monitor it, look at it, and then make an individual decision based on risk factors.
Do you have a question for the good doc? Zorba will go to great heights to help answer it. Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Hang around here, an interesting topic to talk over next. More of your calls, our medical myth buster, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. To the phones shortly, but first, Zorba, a study on artificial sweeteners.
That's right. So I want to talk about this study and talk about sort of science and the media in general.
Yeah.
So it took place in the journal Nature. Journal Nature is a prestigious journal. The Nature and Science are the two basic science journals that are right on the top.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked at – what they're looking at is beneficial bacteria and whether or not the bacteria in our gut can affect basically how we digest sugar in our body.
Okay.
And it looked at artificial sweeteners. It looked at the three sweeteners, which are the most common sweeteners, which are Sweet and Low, which happens to use saccharin.
Mm-hmm.
They looked at sucralose, which is Splenda, and they looked at aspartame, which is NutraSweet, commonly used. They used 20 mice, okay? So they looked at these mice, and what they wanted to see is what was the response of the mice when they ate these, when they had these artificial sweeteners, when they actually gave them sugar in the body, what mm-hmm. actually happened. And lo and behold, it turned out that the mice who were consuming artificial sweeteners had higher blood sugar levels when they actually were taking sugar in. So the question was, are these mice more prone to diabetes?
Huh.
In other words, do artificial sweeteners produce diabetes? And that's what that's sort of what the media took off. So then they gave a number of volunteers. They looked at volunteers, about 300 non-diabetic volunteers, and found out that volunteers who ate more artificial sweeteners had a higher blood sugar than volunteers who didn't. So then they did another test. This is what's reported in the media. Mm-hmm. They had seven healthy volunteers. Huge study, right?
Yeah,
seven
right. Yeah.
Healthy volunteers who didn't normally consume sweeteners. And when they gave them artificial sweeteners, then after they had it for a while, then they gave them regular sugar. And they found, lo and behold, they had some glucose intolerance, in other words, which is the precursor to diabetes.
Okay, so maybe artificial sweeteners might not be very
The issue is this. All of a sudden, the newspapers came in and said artificial sweeteners cause diabetes. They do not. Artificial sweeteners do not cause diabetes as far as we know now.
Yeah.
And the FDA came in and looked at that and said, wait a minute, these things have been on the market. There's no evidence they cause diabetes. Now, to the most part, I think they're correct. But the other issue that is the sort of the elephant in the room is, do artificial sweeteners cause a weight reduction? And the answer is no, they don't.
Yeah.
People who eat soda pop, for instance, with artificial sweeteners are just as heavy and are heavier. We're getting heavier and heavier the more we consume.
But is the jury still a little out on the diabetes issue?
Absolutely. The jury is out on the diabetes issue, and to jump from a mouse study and a volunteer study with seven volunteers is quite a jump. I would say the jury is out on this, and this answer will not come soon.
1-800-462-7413, toll free. And back to the phones now, Zorba, with a listener in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hi. Thank you, Tom and Zorba, for a very entertaining and informative show.
Thank you for saying that. How can we help?
Well, I had been on morphine for 16 years due to arthritis and a fractured knee. And I had my knee replaced, and I got off the morphine. They say it takes 2 weeks. Well, it took me 26 days, but anyway, I'm clear. But I've been left with a tremor, and it seems to be getting a little better. But I wondered if you had, if Dr. Zorba had some holistic approach to this problem.
Oh, sure. So how much do you drink any alcohol at all?
Well, what's funny is I hadn't drank, due to the fact that I was taking morphine and other pills before that, I didn't drink for 24 years. Mm-hmm. I started drinking vodka straight because it eased the tremors, but I can drink copious amounts of it, uh-huh. And I don't want to go there.
No. You do not want to go down the route of copious amounts of vodka to take care of the tremor that you have, because you will have other problems because you're drinking copious amounts of vodka.
Right.
So there are a couple
I also have Xanax, and for sleeping, my doctor prescribed to me. And he said, well, take those when the tremors get bad, but I feel like a slug. I mean, I really don't want to do that either.
Right. You know? So there are – I'm going to explain to you a pill that's here, but first of all, what actually happened? Now, number one, the tremors may be something that you had, and the morphine was covering them up. So in other words, you may have something called benign essential tremor. It's not really benign, but it's called a benign essential tremor. Every one of us, if we hold out our hands in front of us right now, we all have a natural tremor. And some of us have a tremor that's a little more than others. And what happens is, as we get older, tremors tend to be worse. So people, when you hear some people over the telephone and they sound sort of garrulous, you can tell that they're older because they actually have a tremor in their voice. It's the muscle in their voice. And they often have a tremor in their hand. Alcohol reduces the tremor, but it has other side effects. But beta blockers can work very well for reducing tremor, and they don't have the same side effects. They are a blood pressure pill, widely used. I would recommend you start out with a very small dose of atenolol, A-T-E-N-O-L-O-L, inexpensive generic drug. I would take 12.5 milligrams, half of a 25 milligram tablet, see what it does, wait for 3 to 4 weeks. If not, I'd go up to 25 milligrams. You can go up to 100 milligrams of that drug, especially if your blood pressure can handle it, because it may lower your blood pressure. It may not lower it too much. But beta blockers are great for tremors. They don't have side effects. Xanax is a drug that you can become habituated to. It's called a benzodiazepine. It makes you feel like a slug. You don't need that. So I'd recommend a beta blocker. And by the way, you will continue to get better. If you were on morphine that long, it's my thought that it can take easily 1 year to recover from that. So if you do nothing over time, your tremor is probably going to get better. But the beta blocker may give you some relief now so that you feel better. And more importantly, it may keep you away from the vodka.
Thank you so much, Doc.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Appreciate the call. Thanks. And time now, Zorba, for our medical Mythbuster segment. Today's question comes to us from a listener named Margot. She writes, Dear Zorba and Tom, my husband and I enjoy Indian food, and we like to try products we find in Indian grocery stores. Recently, we bought some mustard oil, which is really delicious in stir fries. The label shows nutritional facts, calories per serving, etc., so it is clearly meant to be eaten. However, it is marked for external use only. Online, there is mention of heart lesions from ingesting mustard oil. Does this mean eat at your own risk? What amounts are safe to eat?
Well, first of all, number one, can you believe everything you see online? That's first of all. I'm not talking about the mustard oil itself, but if somebody says it has heart lesions, I don't know what that means.
But the mustard oil is marked for external use.
Let me ask you a question, Tom. Would you actually consume something which says for external use only?
I would not.
No, neither would I. And number one reason would be I don't know what the manufacturing process is with the mustard oil. So I would never consume something that says for external use only. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why they have nutritional things in the label, but I would stay away from that. Mustard oil that you can buy in an Asian or Indian grocery store, clearly you can use because it's the oil from the mustard seed. So right off the box, I don't think that there's any evidence that I know that it's going to cause heart lesions at all. It is an oil, and I think you can use it, and it's used in Indian cooking. And number two, don't put anything in your mouth that says for external use only. That's not a myth. That's on there for a reason. And so if you want to use mustard oil in stir fry, go get a mustard oil that you can actually consume that says consumption allowed or doesn't have the label for external risk only.
What do you do it when you put it on externally?
I have no idea, but I guess I would bet my massage therapist would know what it's used for externally.
So. Have a myth for Zorba to bust? Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And Zorba, our next caller, is in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. My wife and I are, very diligent listeners and really appreciate your program very much.
Well, thank you.
I would like to ask Dr. Zorba a question, and it is not the usual ache and pain thing, although I have a few. Mm-hmm. And it is this. Do you believe that humor and good, clean jokes have a therapeutic effect in a person's everyday life?
Absolutely. There is no doubt about it. I mean, can you imagine life without humor? Sort of like, it's a bad movie, life without humor. And that's part of the issue with people who are depressed. Mm-hmm. I mean, people who are depressed often have trouble with humor, and they are often quite often, if they're not treated either with psychotherapy, they're often humorless, and so people don't want to be with them as much. I mean, think about it. Would you rather be with somebody who is humorous and says jokes, or would you rather be with someone who is humorless and does not have any jokes? Humor clearly plays an important role in life, undoubtedly.
So I spark up things a little bit. Can I tell a short joke?
Absolutely.
Oh, sure.
Please.
Little Jimmy was having trouble in school with his math. So the teacher, after school one day, said, "Now, Jimmy, let's suppose that you have $1 in your left pocket and $2 in your right pocket. Now, what do you have?" And little Jimmy said, "Somebody else's pants on."
Pretty good.
Thank you. That made me feel very good.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I was going to say a little something about laughter. You, I'm sure, realize that you have a very unique laugh.
Uh-huh.
And everybody's is different, isn't it? Like Tom now.
Everyone's
laugh,
different.
Of course, is different.
Yeah.
And I had a sister. Well, she's gone now. But she, her laugh was not a laugh. It was every time it was a scream.
Oh.
But
it's very good, Tom. Yeah. Excellent.
Also, I wanted to say that your particular laugh, I think, is contagious.
Well, thank you.
I was on a park bench one day, trying to mimic your laugh, but I suddenly stopped. Because people going by looked at me real strangely.
I can just imagine.
That's not true. That I just added.
But thank you. But thank you for that.
Thanks
joke.
For the and joke.
Thanks, okay.
Bye bye. And before we head out today, Zorba, time to let one of our listeners give us a piece of their mind in a segment we call Disagreeing with the Doc.
Are we going to get other music like dum, dum, da-dum, dum, da-dum, da-dum, da-dum?
That's up to our producer. Today's quibble comes from Joanne of Stillwater, Minnesota. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, on a recent show, you stated that generic and branded drugs were exactly the same formula. I agree with the medical ingredients, but I have been told by a pharmacist and heard the director of the Cleveland Clinic state that other components may differ from the original branded drug. The example given on the show was Toprol XL. The XL means extended release. The release component is different in the generic and delivers the drug differently than the original Toprol XL. This means that the effect of the drug is delivered differently in the two compounds and can affect the way the drug does its work in the body. Do you agree? Can you comment on this difference?
Well, first of all, I disagree with the fact that what she said is the effect on the body is different. Let's talk about the difference that's there. First of all, the color of the pill may be different. Well, that's a different ingredient, right? It may be milled differently, and they're correct, but it's the active ingredient that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And so Toprol XL is a good example. It has a time-release aspect to the pill that and sometimes is actually branded. But the drug Toprol, based on FDA guidelines, the actual active drug in the body is the same. So when I say they're the same, they are the same in terms of the drug. They're not the same, just like the label isn't the same when you buy one brand of salt versus another brand of salt, but salt is salt.
But the differences make absolutely no difference.
Well, this is a very interesting thing. The differences, according to the FDA, generally make no difference. They have to be within a certain percentage of exactly the same. It's called good manufacturing practices. So in other words, the brand name, let's say you've got 100 milligrams. Mm-hmm. It may have 100 milligrams, and it has to be within a certain maybe like 99.9 milligrams versus 100 milligrams, 0.1. In other words, there has to be certain quality control with how many milligrams is in the drug. When they do a generic, it has to be up to the same quality, but what the tolerance is, the FDA determines. So it may not be absolutely exactly 100% congruent, but it is generally considered to be exactly the same.
Now, let me push
and
you
I hope
on.
I've explained
Let me push
that.
You on this. If I'm taking a generic and not getting exactly what I want, would it make any sense for me to go to the regular drug?
No. There are very few exceptions to that rule. The exception used to be the drug Coumadin. Mm. And Coumadin had to do with the manufacturing process for Coumadin. And the name brand for Coumadin was considered to be very important compared to the generic. That is no longer the case. But almost without exception, it makes no difference.
If you disagree with something Zorba said, just post it on our Facebook page or send us an email at
ZorbaWPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, you can always like us or see us on Facebook.
And of course, you can call us anytime at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidrum. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1011Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.